please be seated, everyone, and we'll call our next case, which is case number 58663, Southwest Gas Corporation versus Sierra Pacific Power Company et al. And on the attorney's side, Mr. Pulsenberger representing the appellants. And we have Mr. Elmore representing the respondents. So, Mr. Pulsen, would you want to reserve any time on this case?
Yes, I do, and we'll have to see how that goes, Your Honor.
Very well.
I don't think we figured out how all the time is being divided.
Good afternoon. You are splitting your time up, then? Or?
I'm not splitting my time up, but there are four parties.
Okay, I just saw a lot of attorneys here, so I didn't know.
I'm trying to get them out of my table.
Okay. Very well, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Gibbons. May it please the Court, Dan Pulsenberg for Southwest Gas. This case is just a mess, and it is an unusually messy case for an en banc argument, because en banc arguments usually present issues, important legal issues, and this case does. But it addresses, finally, the issue I've been trying to get in front of the court of limitation of damages tied to an insurance clause. But that's an issue the district court didn't even address, because of all of the issues that were involved here, that I think I hate to make an argument, especially when I'm talking down about court, that this is just a series of wrong results. Let me explain the case just a little bit. In 1980, Southwest Gas and Sierra Pacific did a land swap. This land in green was originally, originally belonged to Southwest Gas, and the land in blue originally belonged to Sierra Pacific, and they traded the parcels. Traded the parcels. Now, as part of the, as a result, and Sierra Pacific owned this land and all of this land. So the first question presented, because the plaintiffs sued Southwest Gas because they claimed they didn't have any easement access to the property. The first question is there an easement, and where is it? Well, of course there's an easement. There's an easement by one of two ways. There's an express easement in the contract itself. It set out that there is an easement.
That easement expired upon termination of the sale of the property.
The fact that there is an easement didn't expire. In the 1980 swap agreement, it simply said that there is, that Sierra Pacific will give us an easement, a non-exclusive easement, and it said in the parcel. Now, they try to argue that it's this parcel here, but by saying the parcel, they're trying to argue that it is the 100-foot strip. But as Judge Flanagan points out, that parcel is this entire parcel. And because it's ambiguous, he said that if there is an easement, and that he did it as an by operation of law, that it should be the purple road here. There are two means of access. There are two possible easements here. Remember, all of this land is Sierra Pacific. And I apologize, Justice Jerry, I'm blocking you. So there was an easement that goes to this point, and then the purple road goes up here and diagonally across. What Sierra Pacific is claiming now is, no, it should be the pink road, which goes up this strip.
Mr. Pulsenberg, within the discussion, there were two kind of easements involved. We had one that went with the land, as you semi-outlining, but the second one that cut across one parcel into the other, didn't that extinguish with the sale?
No, but there was a 1985 road maintenance agreement, and that had to do with all the properties. There was a road this way, a road here, another road here. That all had to do with the agreement to maintain those properties together. That was not a license. Sierra Pacific also argues that there was a license because of the paragraph right before in the 1980 agreement, but that was a license to use the storage tanks and the railroad spur. There was nothing that says that our right of easement was simply a license that expired.
No, but there was, in that very same agreement, a reciprocal right of use. And what did that pertain to?
In the 1985 agreement?
The 1985 agreement, the road maintenance agreement. That was.
It had to do with all these roads. I don't think the 1985...
It doesn't say that. I see it in there.
Judge, I don't think it says anything about that. I don't think that they...
No, and the reciprocal right of use, then it goes on. As you read through the rest of that agreement, this agreement shall immediately terminate before or after 10-year period.
Right, and then it moves year to year.
By either of the parties here to a property. And so to me, that's what I'm trying to understand.
I know, and I don't think the 1985 agreement has anything to do with this.
Okay.
The right of easement comes from one of two places. There's an express right of easement in the 1980 agreement, and if there isn't, there's one that is formed by operation of law. Judge Flanagan says it forms by operation of law, and that it has to be in the purple diagonal strip, and that's where he places it. Let me say that for my purposes, I'm not sure it matters where the easement is. Plaintiffs filed this lawsuit claiming that there was no right of access whatsoever.
Would landlock that piece of property?
They said it was landlocked because Sierra Pacific had refused to let them have access either way. Now they're claiming on appeal that they didn't deny right of access on the Pink Road, but that's not true. They not only did they deny right of access, but even after the lawsuit was filed, and we kept making, I have problems with this case because we try to seek judicial resolution. And I think even the justice system failed in this regard. We kept making motions for summary judgment saying, look, there is a right of easement. And Sierra Pacific, even before trial, during trial, kept saying, no, there is no right of access. So the lawsuit against us, on which we are liable for $5 million, is premised on the idea that there is no right of access whatsoever. But there is a right of access. I'm not sure it matters where it is. But I think Judge Flanagan is correct that it is on the purple diagonal road because that's the road that we kept using. That's the road that they allowed us to use. There was an express license as to that road. But even if it is the Pink Road, we sold the land. We were sued because there was no right of access because Sierra Pacific wrongfully denied a right of access. There is a right of access. The judge's order repeatedly says that the claim is based on there being no right of access, based on there being a misrepresentation that there was a right of access, but there was a right of access.
Tell me why Judge Flanagan made that decision in light of the fact there was the 100-foot strip that was indicated in the 1980 agreement that was adjacent.
Well, Sierra Pacific had maintained that the 100-foot strip was simply an easement having to do with utility companies. And I think they made that argument based largely on the 1999 easement, which actually went further. There was a piece of property right up here that sold the land to Abbott, we maintained. And we got an easement that went all the way up to that.
All right.
Now Sierra Pacific claims that that right of easement, that the entire 100-foot strip, the Pink Road, was only for utility use, and they would not let Abbott, the new purchasers, buy that land. And as a result of all this, I mean, there is a right. Abbott sued the wrong party. Abbott should have sued Sierra Pacific for a determination that there was an easement. And there is an easement here. Instead, they sued Southwest Gas for determination of damages. Now, we in turn sue Sierra Pacific, and we sue Alliance, our real estate broker. And we're trying to seek indemnity from them. But I think Sierra Pacific makes the point the best. It's that we don't have any liability that's derivative of them. We don't have any liability at all. because there is an easement, we're not liable for this. And it's not as though they sued us saying, okay, there's a difference between one easement versus the other easement. They sued us on the premise that there was no easement whatsoever. And as a result, I don't think there are damages at all. And I'd like to save my 5.5 minutes for rebuttal.
You may do so.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Olson, you have something you want to add?
I do, Your Honor. We're in a position where we are supportive of Mr. Rosenberg's case to a large extent. We have an argument against indemnity. I'd like to briefly touch on
that. Very well.
It pleases the Court, Eric Olson, representing the Alliance defendants. We agree with Mr. Polsenberg's analysis with respect to the easement. We also agree with a number of the issues that he's raised as far as the damages, double recovery, those issues, particularly the fact that the damages that were paid as part of the Stewart Title settlement really take care of the damages in the case, and especially any kind of tort damages in the case. And that's where we depart from Mr. Polsenberg thereafter. They, of course, sought and obtained what's termed equitable implied indemnity. What the court really did below was grant equitable implied contribution, I think, and awarded 25% of the liability, 25% indemnity to Southwest Gas. Equitable indemnity, applied indemnity, isn't appropriate in the contract case. I don't want to belabor this. I think that Mr. Polsenberg, in his own opening brief, gave this issue the importance it deserved, those 10 pages out of 112. But what they argued in that brief was that the kind of equitable indemnity that this court granted in Medallion and Doctors in those cases was appropriate to this case. However, this is a case where all the liability, if you look at the judgment, was contract-based liability, not tort liability. So the application of these cases, which are on their face, cases where there's a determination to be made between tort feasors as to who's liable, who's most at fault, who's active and negligent, they don't apply to this case, which is purely contract. Even though Medallion uses the word contract, in that case, that word was used when the court looked at how do you apply an analysis to joint tortfeasors. You have to have some special relationship. That's why the contract between the subcontractor and the general was important. Here we don't have a case with joint tortfeasors at all. So what they're advocating, the only thing they advocated in their opening brief, equitable implied equitable indemnity, is not appropriate. They take a stab at applying the Sober Tellerman case in the reply brief. That's a different kind of indemnity. That's where a contract term is implied by the court, a missing term. It's not a question of judging who's more at fault. In this case, we don't think that any award of indemnity is appropriate with respect to our client. In addition to that, even if the court were going to apply equitable indemnity, Judge Flanagan did an analysis, and he determined, as a factual determination, he determined that Southwest Gas was more at fault, that Mr. Brewer's remarks and pointing to the easement and all this were worthy of 75% allocation. So the court made, rightly or wrongly, court made that determination. So even if somehow the court were to get to that analysis, the factual finding is that our client was less negligent. I guess if you use apply the analysis, it would be more passively negligent. So the result would be the same. The one other thing I want to say about the allocation and the equitable argument is we ought not be liable for, certainly not for the RDC damages as a matter of indemnity. The court specifically, RDC had a claim against our client. that claim was disposed of based on the fact of lack of privity. You can't, and you can't, RDC can't get in directly that they couldn't get directly. That certainly wouldn't be equitable. Unless the court has any questions.
Questions? Do you agree with Mr. Polsenberg's characterization of this case, just a series of wrong results?
I do to a large extent. I will tell you that to some extent, particularly on the indemnity side, the court was faced with the pleadings were what they were. The third-party complaint saw three kinds of indemnity: implied contractual, implied equitable, the tort analysis, and implied equitable partial. And that's what they got. It is an odd scenario to see them appealing a decision that was, in that sense, in their favor. But other than that, we agree with the analysis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I know we used up the 15 minutes. We're going to give Mr. Polsenberg 2 minutes in rebuttal here. So,
with respect, Your Honor, he argued against me. He argued I'm not entitled to indemnity. We
did
begin by supporting the position because it is not.
Okay, I got to get the rules here on this one. Let's do this. Let's give you at least 2 minutes, and I'll try and make sure I comply with the rules properly on the arguments. But, Mr. Ellie, you'll get additional 2 minutes in your argument then, so you may proceed.
You want Mr. Peterson to...
Mr. Peterson, how do you want to do it, gentlemen?
I'm an appellant and a respondent.
Well, why don't we go? We get kind of a procedural morass here. We'll try and figure it out. So why don't you proceed, Mr. Peterson, and we'll start with 17 minutes and hopefully balance this out properly.
Right.
With all due respect to Mr. Polsenberg, this case was not a mess. It's actually a relatively simple case, and it boils down to basically a simple thing, and that is this is kind of a garden variety misrepresentation case with respect to a statement that was made by Southwest Gas to Abbott Construction and RDC, their affiliate, as to the specific location of access to their property.
Mr. Peterson, preliminary question, perhaps oversimplifying what you're about to say. Easement, no easement, where?
There was an easement, but it was an easement that was promised in the event a condition materialized. And the condition that had to materialize in order for the easement to be granted was that it must become necessary. It's probably, in order to explain this, I didn't really want to do this. I hate to take my time doing it, but I think it's easier to understand basically the legal issues if you understand the transaction. What happened was way back in 1980, Southwest Gas and Sierra Pacific jointly operated facilities in Northwest Reno across the street from Hunt High School. They had gas facilities, mainly Paiute Pipeline, and we had electric facilities. There came a point in time when Sierra Pacific Power Company no longer needed the gas from Southwest because Sierra Pacific built its own pipeline, Tuscarora. When that occurred, they decided to sell the property because they were no longer going to be needing it to sell or to store propane and gas in order to sell it to us. This was something that was anticipated possibly, and so there was the 1980 property exchange agreement. In that agreement, what the party said was, look, we jointly operate this whole area, this whole facility.
We have copies of the map. We're probably pretty familiar, I would suggest.
Again?
We do have copies of the map.
This is the general area. You can see that this area here, the 5-acre parcel, this parcel at the bottom here is the Northwest Gas parcel that we were going to do. The whole area was jointly operated by the two utilities. There were roadways throughout the facility that we jointly used. So at that point in time, there was no issue with respect to access to any of the property because we had all agreed that we were going to use all of the roads for our mutual benefit. When the property exchange agreement came about, the roadways were still being jointly used. However, Sierra Pacific said, if you ever sell this property, then our agreement for the joint use, the licenses for the joint use, is going to go away.
And that is stated in what legal document?
That is stated in the 1980 property exchange agreement. It's going to go away. In such event, we will grant you an easement. Because at that point in time, your licenses will expire. You will need access. And so we will give you an easement. And the document specifically says, to the extent necessary, we will grant you an easement. If there's nothing else that I would like you to take away from the argument today, it is this. Sierra Pacific Power Company, when they entered into this property exchange agreement with Southwest Gas, said, if you sell the property, we will grant you an easement. Or actually, it said, if you ever actually need it, they would need it at that time, we will grant you an easement. But the document specifically identified and located the place where that easement would be. It specifically says the easement will be... This being north, more specifically be west of this parcel, and it'll be specifically east of this parcel. What the document says is there is a parcel that is west of this parcel, and that is the east of this parcel. There is, in fact, one property and only one property in the universe that fits that description. It is a 100-foot strip of property separating the two properties, the blue on the west and the green on the east. It is specifically described. It is also described as saying it generally runs. This parcel that is described, where the easement will be located when you need it, is west and east, and the parcel runs north and south. North and south. And the third thing it says, it is south of a loading dock. You will see here on this map, south of the unloading dock, and that is this particular area here. So
can I ask, and I hate to interrupt you, but I'm going to ask you again, see the little green square up there that's represented,
yes.
Parcel, yes. My understanding, that is the landlocked piece.
No.
Okay.
No, what this is, Judge Perigary.
Little green.
I know why the little green pieces are. I didn't draw it, but I know why it's not part of the trial exhibit, but I know what it is. When Southwest Gas sold this property to Abbott, they retained the small piece.
Okay.
The reason they wanted to retain this small piece is because the Paiute Pipeline, which brings natural gas from Idaho down to Reno, ends here. So they wanted, it's called the city gate. They retained it. That's the only reason it's there.
Got it.
But the access to this parcel, Judge Seda, was an easement to be granted to the extent necessary and when necessary, and that became necessary when they sold the parcel because there are other accesses.
For other purposes,
etc. Because it says if you ever sell it, the licenses expire, at which time you'll need an easement, and this is where the easement is going to be located. There's some dispute, this is a complete misstatement by Mr. Polsenberg, that this piece here is part of this parcel. This 100-foot strip came into existence historically before the Parcel Map Act. What happened was Sierra Pacific at one time owned the green parcel before Southwest Gas. It owned it, and we sold it. We sold it to Vaughn Millworks. And when we sold it, a few years after we sold it, we said, you know what, we need a piece of it back. We need a piece of this back. So we took a piece of it back, and what we took back was the 100-foot strip. That's what we took back, principally for an easement, not for this parcel, but for this parcel as well. So that's how that 100-foot strip came into existence. It is actually described in the deed from Vaughn that we bought it from. We sold to Vaughn. Vaughn sold this piece back to us in a deed. It's in the record. And then when Vaughn sold to Southwest Gas, it specifically accepted this 100-foot piece because we owned it. Vaughn didn't own it at that time. When we made the property exchange with Southwest Gas, we likewise, the deed itself specifically says, but not this piece here, the reason why, we already own it. But that is where the easement is going to be located.
The only other, the piece where the restricted access or the access was not permitted was through the other little purple piece that goes up, no, down
this? No.
Yeah. But, this was this utility easement that Mr. Polsenberg was talking about.
I'm not sure. There is a, I don't know. There are a bunch of utility easements. There's a bunch of utility easements all over the properties here, a bunch of them.
But the roadway, there's only one roadway. That would restrict the access to that piece of property to not make it landlocked. You're saying there's the 100
yes.
Foot strip.
Yes. Here's the thing.
That contained no other utility restrictions or anything?
Well, that's kind of a side issue.
Access.
That's kind of a, it's still an access. It's kind of a side issue. He's correct. We did claim it was restricted to utility purposes, but Judge Flanagan disagreed with it, but it is still an access. If there's one other thing that I would like you to understand, one other thing, and that is the property exchange agreement not only specifically described this as the area where the easement is to be located, not only in terms of where its physical location is, but the agreement also said, and by the way, Sierra Pacific, now we're in 1980, there is a parcel map act. Sierra Pacific, you have to go and get this thing parceled out in order to make everything proper and legal. One of the things you do when you file a parcel map, when you take it down to the county to get approved, has to show access. Got to show access for a whole place, or they won't approve it. Sierra Pacific did file?
No, not yet.
Did file? Did two parcel maps. Connection.
As required in the property exchange agreement.
As required. Here's another picture of the map.
I wonder if you could come up here for me.
This being the 5-acre parcel, this is the actual parcel map. This is the parcel map that's in the record. This is the 5-acre parcel that Southwest got. Here's the exchange property down here. Here's the 100-foot strip. Specifically delineated and located on the parcel map. It specifically says roadway easement. It is specifically a squiggly line, which it would be when the agreement says, we're giving you an easement for a roadway, the specific location within here to be identified and decided on later. But we know that it's in here. How do you get to the street? This still makes you landlocked. So you look at the map, and it says, also a 30-foot roadway easement, file number, gives you the file number, the recording number, which leads to the state highway frontage road. The parcel map that we were supposed to file with respect to the agreement for Southwest Gas to show them access to this particular parcel says here it is, and here is how you get out to the street. Then we have the second parcel map. Could you come up one more time? Here it is again. This is what's called the third parcel map. That's the fifth one. All filed at the same time. We have the same 100-foot strip. We have the same identified roadway easement. We have the other easement identified in the other parcel map that tells you how you get out to the highway. And here it is. Tells you how to get out to the highway. That's the one that's identified here. In other words, you can't file a parcel map without showing access to the parcel. It was identified in the pink parcel. That's where the easement was. Judge Flanagan put it somewhere else. He put it up here. One other thing wrong with Judge Flanagan's decision. He said it was vague and ambiguous, so therefore I'm going to put it here because that's where people were using it. Obviously, people were using it because that was the license. They were using all the roads in the area. When the license expires, that's the particular area of the road. But even if you took him at his legal word as ambiguous, as you all said in the St. James case, and under Section 401 of the restatement, if there is an ambiguity, it's the Serbian tenant owner. It's us that gets to decide where to put the easement. He put it here. We said, don't put it there. It goes right in the middle of the gas plant. We've got electric lines going all over the place. If you're going to put it somewhere,
put it here where we wanted it and where the parties agreed to put it.
Do I have any time left?
3 minutes and 50 seconds.
There's one other thing that I would like you to understand, and that is it's stated this way in the brief, and Mr. Colsonbrook stated it again. He said that this case really is about a representation that there was no access. That is not true. That is just not true. If you read page 14 and 15 of Judge Flanagan's order, he said, look, to the extent there's no access, none whatsoever, Abbott been compensated by Stewart Title on a separate claim. He said that twice. Abbott has met its burden approved by preponderance of the evidence of Southwest through its agent negligently misrepresented there was legal access. However, because of the settlement with Stewart Title, they have not shown damages stemming from this representation. He said it again on the next page. What the claim was, which Judge Flanagan found liability on, which is why we could never have liability, is he said they breached a covenant of good faith and fair dealing, and they breached it in three respects. One thing he said was, you negligently misrepresented to them that they had a certain access, the one that they wanted, the one that they came to ask us for, in which we said, no, you can't have that access. We never said you couldn't have access, but you can't have that particular access. Judge Flanagan said, that's the one you promised them. They don't have an access there. That's a negligent misrepresentation. And they don't have an access there. Their access is in the pink parcel. He then said, you breached the covenant of good faith and fair dealing by failing to help your buyer, help Abbott. You, Southwest, didn't help Abbott get through this particular process. That's a breach of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing. And last, you breach of warranty, because you said, Southwest, that you didn't know, that you had no knowledge or information that there were access issues, but you had the Tycor Title report that specifically said there was a problem with respect to access. That's the basis upon which liability was fixed on Southwest Gas. Sierra Pacific had nothing to do with this transaction. We didn't even know about this sale for 7 to 8 months after it occurred. At that time is when Abbott came to us with the diagonal road, and we said, no, that's, you can't, we said you can't have it. We looked at it. We said we'd like to give it to you. They also asked for another easement. We said we can't give you that one either. But that's what the case was all about. It's not about no access. Liability was predicated on things, on behavior and conduct that they engaged in that we had nothing whatever to do with. We didn't know anything about the type or title report. We had no transactions with Abbott until 8 months after the transaction occurred. We can't be held liable in indemnity or contribution for their conduct or their behavior, at least with respect to those three things. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Rick Elmore on behalf of Abbott and RDC.
Mr. Elmore, before you argue, I'm prepared for this case and didn't think it was necessary to make a disclosure, but I do now, because I don't recall any of these events occurring, but at one time in the 90s, I was a partner with Mr. Bialy in a office project, their business project, where their business office was located, that was sold before I went on the bench. In 1998 or 1997, we've had no other transactions or businesses together, but I intend to reduce this disclosure to writing. I don't want any of the lawyers to comment about this, and Chief, I would ask the court not deliberate on the case till counsel have an opportunity to weigh the disclosure as to whether I should be disqualified. But I don't want to hold up the proceedings. I just want to make that disclosure for all counsel to be aware of and have the opportunity to weigh in on.
Very well. Mr. Elmore, you may proceed. Thank you, Your Honor. On that point, I've represented these folks for a long period of time, and my recollection is that there were a number of people who were partners in that building. This was not a circumstance where one or two individuals were the owners of the office premise, which is different than any of the properties that were discussed in the litigation. All right. At the outset, I want to share with you this couple of observations. First of all, I agree with Mr. Peterson's characterization that this is a far more clean and a far more simple case than Mr. Polsenberg would have you believe. And I certainly don't share his perspective that it's obvious from the pleadings and the record in this case that there's an access easement of any kind that goes to this particular parcel. But the simple fact is that in 1980, two industrial utilities in northern Nevada decided it was in their best business interest to swap some land. They'd had a lengthy...
Hang on a second. I know we originally set the for total argument of 30 minutes, regardless of the number of parties involved here, but what I want to do is give you an extra 2 minutes, Mr. Elmore, and then give Mr. Polsenberg afterwards to try and equalize the time. I know just to say they had a commitment, that anticipating it was a half an hour argument. Are you able to stay a little longer, or did you have to just listen to this on tape? Okay, very well. Why don't you proceed?
Thank you. These in industrial entities, longstanding interworking relationship with one another, decide they're going to do this land swap. That's the 1980 agreement. That document was unrecorded, as was the 1985 road maintenance agreement. When this transaction began in the mid-2000s, Southwest Gas, as the seller of this parcel, was in control of those documents along with Sierra Pacific Power Company. Mr. Brewer, the vice president in charge of these affairs, said that he had a copy of the exchange agreement and a copy of the road maintenance agreement, and while he personally did not give those records to anybody, he thought they were important to the transaction, and they were. But those documents were never delivered to my client. Mr. Brewer took Mr. Simonson out on the property initially and told him, this is how a buyer accesses the property. And Mr. Brewer told him, you can tell the buyer that this is how he's going to access his parcel. Now, the transaction begins, and there are some preliminary title reports that are exchanged. The first ones come from Stewart Title. They make no reference in any way to information that would contradict the representation that has been made. But in the following year, 2006, Southwest Gas comes into possession of a document that is from another title company, and what it has to do is a title investigation for the carve out of that little piece we were talking about a minute ago. And it was in conjunction with that transaction that Southwest Gas gets the TICOR title report, which makes a clear exception to title. Now, Southwest Gas can argue in this
circumstance. Finish your sentence. Go ahead.
Can argue in this circumstance that it's clear that there is access, but that flies in the face of finding by TICOR title that there was no insurable access to a public road. And it was the failure to disclose that essential information to my client which forms the basis for the claims in this case. It's a case about a clear violation of the covenant of good faith and fair dealing in a contract context, and that's why the damages are appropriate. That's what this case is truly about.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Elmore. Mr. Polsenberg, 4 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Yes, there is access. Yes, there's an easement. But I think that Mr. Elmore may have just now mentioned the important distinction of what's really going on in this case. Just to say that here is what the 1980 agreement says in Section 13. To the extent necessary, it doesn't say if necessary. To the extent necessary, and the experts testify that means how wide the road's going to be. Sierra Pacific grants to Southwest a non-exclusive easement for the construction of roadway in said parcel of real property commencing to the south of the unloading dock area. Here's what Mr. Peterson was saying. Look, here's the unloading dock. That's the purple road. Now, Judge Flanagan said that the language was unclear, it was vague, what it meant as to parcel, because, yes, Minister Peterson came up here and explained about the 100-foot strip, and it was deeded in 1955. But the parcel maps all changed in 1974. And so this strip was no longer running 6 acres here. This was part of this parcel, and this was part of this parcel. So Judge Flanagan said, parcel doesn't mean this little strip here. It means all of this land. And so he said, from the description, here is where it should go, and from their use. There is an easement here. Sierra Pacific says that I've misrepresented things to the court. Three times today, he said that. I haven't misrepresented things. They've changed their position. They used to claim there was no easement. And now they're saying, oh, yeah, there's an easement, but it's somewhere else. But plaintiffs are still saying there wasn't any easement. There was an easement. There was an express easement. I think even if there weren't an express easement, they'd be won by operation of law. But Mr. Elmore said, well, look at the TICOR report. It says there is no insurable interest. And he also says nobody recorded the 1980 agreement. That's why the TICOR report said that there's an issue here, because nobody recorded the 1980 agreement. That's what they raised. Now, if I have any liability for not disclosing their TICOR report, here's where I disagree with Mr. Olson. We turned it over to Alliance, and Alliance was supposed to turn it over to Abbott. But you know what? They had their own real estate people. They had their own lawyers involved. They had a due diligence period where they checked on access that they extended so that they could check on issues. And they would know, looking at the recorded documents, there's nothing here that clarifies what the easement is. They could have checked all that before they bought the property. And then afterwards, Sierra Pacific said, no, you have no access. But Justice Barrett, the blue property is the landlocked property. It's the property we sold to Abbott, except for that little green square.
Got it.
And so they needed a right of access. Now, Judge Flanagan said it was here. Sierra Pacific now, they used to say it's nowhere, no right of access. Now they say it's over here. But there was a right of access. Abbott should have sued Sierra Pacific for declaratory relief to find out where the access is, and there would have been access, and that would have been the end of the case, not a case of money damages. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Posenberg, Mr. Pearson, Mr.